Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, what's going on? Welcome back. Daily Jungle Time. We had a big show today, which means we are going to have a great podcast. We had three awesome interviews. Amir Garrett of the Reds came in. Dude was an absolute revelation. What a great conversation. You are not going to want to miss this. Terry Stotts of the Trailblazers has coached his team up. 13-3 in March, best in the NBA at that time. He broke it down. Then we tagged it all with Pierre McGuire of NBC Sports, who broke down the upcoming NHL playoffs. Alvy, you go ahead and trim that fat and let it roll. Starting with the East. Once again, I feel like I've been doing this every single day, but there is an update. Starting with the Cavaliers, as challenging a year as it's been for the Cavaliers, you got to admit, and I said so myself, they look like they had everything under control as recently as 6 days ago when they went into Boston and they smashed the Celtics. They sent a message. We're still the defending champs. The East still runs through us. We're still the team to beat. We know what time it is. We know where the freaking switch is. We don't have to deal with any of you. All of you deal with us. That was the statement they sent when they went into Boston and they hammered the Celtics 6 days ago. And that's how it looked. And that's how it felt until now. Because they choked away that 26-point fourth quarter lead against the Hawks with the top seed in the East hanging in the balance. We talked about that all day yesterday. Then what do? They go out and they blow another double-digit fourth-quarter lead last night. They lost to Miami. That enabled Boston to jump over them in the East. Now it's the Celtics, not the Cavaliers, who control their own destiny. Of course, the Cavaliers will tell you LeBron didn't play, Kyrie didn't play, Tristan Thompson didn't play, and most of all, the top seed doesn't matter to us. They'll also tell you they've been a two seed five times with LeBron, and they made it to the finals all five times. Yeah, great. Great. Except for one thing. The top seed did matter as recently as about a week ago when Ty Lue said that he would play LeBron and Kyrie until they locked up that top spot. So, of course, it matters to them. Just as it matters to everybody else, 67% of the number ones over the past 30-plus years have gone on to win the title. So the only people who say that the top seed doesn't matter are the people who do not have the top seed. Again, I'm not saying that the Cavs aren't going to make it out of the East. I'm not saying that. But I'm not basing that on the Cavs being the defending champs and the fact that they're playing so great, because they're not. I base it on the fact that I really cannot make a compelling argument for anybody else in the East. But if the Cavs aren't concerned, they should be. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They have played average basketball for months now. They don't defend. They suddenly can't finish. They are banged up. They don't trust their bench. And they're about to lose the top seed and the home court that goes along with it. It's trending badly. Not a bad game. Not a bad week. This is who they've been for the better part of 3 months now. No way they beat Golden State playing like this. And that's if they do get out of the East. And that's suddenly no lock either. But if they do, Golden State will be right there waiting to rip back what was rightfully theirs. Because Golden State right now is playing their best ball when it matters most. And they're only going to get better because Kevin Durant is playing well already and he's going to reacclimate. And they're going to be even tougher. Even despite last night's loss, that means nothing. Cleveland getting beat last night is a problem. Golden State getting beat last night means nothing. Golden State wasn't playing for anything last night other than getting Durant back into the mix. And last night went a long way towards making that happen. Amir Garrett is my guest. So let me ask you about that debut on Friday night. You needed just 78 pitches to get through six innings of scoreless baseball. You allowed those two hits. You struck out four. You did not allow a runner to score or reach second base, I should say. As far as major league debuts go, that's one of the best. So what kind of emotions were you feeling when you first took the bump? Were you nervous at all?
I was just nervous leading up to my start. You know, that morning I woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and the whole day, you know, I was very antsy and I was nervous, and, you know, I had butterflies in my stomach. I had to go shopping a little bit, take my mind off the game just to relax myself, just to not even think about the game. But as soon as I got on the mound, it felt like all that was gone, like all the butterflies, anxiousness, the nervousness, it all went out the door. And as soon as I got up there, it felt like, you know, I was home and that's where I belong. And after the first pitch, I knew that I was going to be okay, you know, because I didn't have those jitters, and my heart really wasn't racing how it should have been. You know, like when the AAA last year, when I pitched in the Futures game last year, my heart was really, really pounding, and I was, like, really, really, really nervous. But when I got onto the diamond on Friday, you know, it was like all that was gone, and it was like I was home.
Reds pitcher Amir Garrett joining us. I've got to say, from the outside looking in, that's how it looked. I mean, you seemed really calm. You seemed really comfortable, much more so than a pitcher making his first major league start. Now, I mentioned at the very top, you did play college basketball at St. John's. You've been on the big stage before. Does it translate? And did having been there before help you in this situation?
For sure, it helped me. I played at St. John's. I played in the Garden. We had a bunch of people in there, maybe 30,000 in the Garden. You know, filled it up. You know, I felt like times like that, it helped me to prepare for times like this, to play in front of big crowds. You know, it's just a different environment, just different game, you know. And I was there in the Futures game 2 years in a row, and the games were both sold out. I know it's different. It should be a different feeling, but, you know, I felt like I was prepared for what was happening Friday to all the fans and to everything that was going on, and I was prepared for it, and that's how I was able to settle down and just, you know, focus on pitching in the game.
Reds pitcher Amir Garrett joining us. You know, I fully appreciate this. I think you have to go back a little bit. When you were young, your grandfather, Pops, had put a baseball in your hand. What do you remember about the very first time you started playing baseball, and then how big of an impact did your grandfather have on you?
You know, the vivid memory I remember of my grandfather when he put the baseball in my hand was I used to be scared of the ball when I was little. My grandpa used to make me put my hands behind my back and just take the baseball and just, not hard, but just toss it at my chest, just not even hard at all. And it's like, he's like, oh, if you flinch, we got to do it 10 more minutes. Oh, if you flinch, we got to do it 10 more minutes. And after that, like, I don't want to get hit by the ball, man. So, you know, at a young age, about 8 or 9, he was like, oh, let's see if he can pitch, you know. And he started me young as pitching, and, you know, and it was something that I always liked to do. You know, I like to play the field too. I like to play outfield, first base. But I used to love to pitch, man. I used to love to pitch. And my grandfather was a left-hander too, so that helped me even more, you know. But when I was younger, I used to be both hands, and him and my dad used to make me just throw left-handed the whole time.
So you find something you love, baseball, pitching, but then your grandfather passes away and you're growing up, and then you put baseball to the side and you start to play basketball, and you're an excellent basketball player. You won a national slam dunk contest with a 360 off the side of the backboard dunk. But Major League scouts just kept running into your father and talking about how interested they were in you. So at that point, what kind of thoughts were you having about baseball? Was it in the past? Had you moved on?
Yeah, I moved on. My grandfather passed when I was in, like, 8th grade. One of my friends just came up to me and was like, Amir, you want to play on my basketball team? And I'm like, sure, you know, why not? I was very raw. I didn't know how to play basketball at all. I didn't know anything about basketball, nothing. You know, I just went to a game and just had like 15 rebounds and like 15 points. And I was like, you know what? I like basketball. I love basketball. And at the time, it was so close to my grandfather passing away. You know, I couldn't go back to Diamond because it made me miss my grandfather more. I mean, I know it doesn't make sense, but it just made me miss him. And I was like, you know, I was always sad and I couldn't do it. So when I found a different sport playing basketball, you know, it's what kept me happy. And, that's what I wanted to do, and I was pretty set on playing basketball until my father, you know, he made me, you know, it was like pulling teeth with me. He made me go out there and throw the baseball around, and made me do this with baseball, made me do that with baseball, and go to North Carolina for the USA trials and all that, and all these little showcases that we had. He made me do that. I didn't want to do it. He made me do it. It's funny how things happen like that, because yeah, how things turn around now, you know, if he didn't make me do that, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now.
Clones, let me get at you for a minute so I can talk to you about stamps.com. You can create your Stamps account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. Unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes. Print postage for letters or packages at your convenience, 24/7, 7 days a week. It's convenient, it's easy, it's reliable, totally flexible. I use Stamps.com because I love how easy it is. I love how convenient it is. I hate going to the post office. I no longer have to. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Rome. Stamps.com. Enter Rome. Stamps.com. Never, ever go to the post office again. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to the Daily Jungle.
And to your first point, I don't think that's strange at all. I could see why you would not want to go back and play baseball. I could see why that would make you think about your grandfather and why you'd miss him. I can understand why that would be hard. So ultimately, you've got these options, and the scouts are coming around. Your dad made you play, and you're getting better and better and better. So what made you choose baseball over basketball?
2014, it was hard juggling the two sports. It was really hard, man. And I wasn't getting the full potential at anything. In basketball, I was just a mediocre college basketball player. You know, I wasn't able to focus on anything. You know, I wasn't able to be for the expectations that they had for me, at St. John's had for me. I wasn't living up to those expectations because I had baseball. And then in baseball, I wasn't living up to those expectations either. So when I was 2014 in the Dayton Dragons, my second year being there, I got my butt beat up the whole first half, you know, and playing between the two sports and doing schoolwork, you know, that clogs your mind. You can't never, like, just focus. Like, you have homework, you know, after the games, I got to do homework on the bus ride. I'm not sleeping. I'm not doing nothing. I got homework, and I can't focus, you know, and it's like I had to turn in an assignment, and I'd be pitching that day, and I'm like, man, this sucks, you know. But I had a really good second half in 2014. My play basically made the decision for me. I realized that I could be pretty good at pitching, and if I just gave baseball my all, you know, I would hopefully reach my potential. And, you know, when I made that decision, you know, it was a tough decision. I was at Northridge. I transferred to Northridge. You know, I had to sit out that year because I transferred, and, you know, that helped a lot too because I was able to go from spring training the whole season. And, you know, I had fun playing the whole year, just going from year-round playing baseball. And like I said, my play basically made the decision for me, and the Reds put me on the 40-man in that offseason in November. And, you know, it was up from there.
Reds pitcher Amir Garrett joining us. This is such a great conversation. I think that what you're saying resonates with so many people. Not that any of us can really recognize or understand what it's like to have that kind of ability, but when you're talking about how I'm going to school and I've got two sports, and when I'm not playing or training, I'm studying, and it just sucked. I can't sleep. I can't do anything. Like, I've got a 10th grader right now in high school who's in a really competitive academic environment, and he's on the baseball team, and we talk about this all the time. The kid's grinding and can't sleep because there's so much pressure to try and do all these things at once. You mentioned Northridge. I got to ask you, having grown up in the 818 myself, how did the 818 treat you?
You know, I loved it out there. Northridge, that school was wonderful. You know, just being out there in the valley, man, California sunshine, it was wonderful, man. I loved every bit of it. You know, it made me miss home because, you know, I'm from California. When I was in New York, you know, it made me miss home a lot. That's why I came back, man. I was homesick. And my coach, Reggie Theus, he was very good with me, you know. When I made my decision, he was, you know what, he said, you got to do what's best for you, you know, and it was a great experience there in Northridge.
Hey, Amir, one last thought. I'm a big animal guy, too. I know you have a rescue dog. What is this dog's name, and what's he like as a dog, and where did you find him?
Okay, that's what I'm talking about right there. Somebody that's interested in my pup, man.
I am.
My dog, we rescued him in 2015. Me and my girlfriend, we rescued him. Funny thing, man. We were going in there, and I had my mind set up on another dog, a little dog, a pit bull. But we went to the last cage, and there he was, man. Big old, big-headed dog, yellow face and everything, all dirty. You know, they said they don't really know what the story was on him. And it was like, he came in here, his face was pepper sprayed, and they were like, but he doesn't have a bad bone in his body. He's not aggressive. Like, when we took him out, he just walked with us and, you know, just listened to everybody. So we're back there, and she goes, babe, I want this dog. And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, oh, no. Ugh. Because he's all dirty. And I'm like, no, I don't want him. No, please. So he got up to the glass, literally put his paw on the glass, and was turning his head and was just giving me the puppy dog eyes. My girlfriend was already in love with him, but he somehow knew that he had to win me over for us to get him. So we take him out, we play with this dog, and she's throwing the ball around to him, and he's like, he just looking at like, nah, I'm not going for that. He's like, I'm too old for that. I don't like fetch. So he's just sitting by me and rolling over and stuff like that. And I'm like, man, get off me. I'm just like, ugh. And so he's just like all in my face, and I'm just like, man, I'm like, babe, you want this dog? And she's like, yeah. And I'm just like, all right, we'll get him. I was like, man, I grew so much in a matter of like minutes, and I fell in love with this dog after I did not like him because of his appearance, you know? And my dog now, I mean, the dog he is now is, he's the best dog ever. Doesn't have any bad bones in his body. He won't harm a fly. He's just a big old teddy bear, man. And, you know, my dog has an Instagram, Doza Garrett. I made him an Instagram because I want to bring awareness, pit bull awareness, because a lot of people have bad raps on pit bulls. And I just do it to show his personality. And my dog does everything, man. He doesn't do anything bad. I take him everywhere with me. I take him to the mall. I take him to the store. You know, and everybody loves him. He's just a loving dog. You know, and he got a second chance at life. And I'm glad I'm the one that is able to give him that life that he deserves. And you know, he does right by me. He listens. You know, everybody loves him. He loves kids. You know, if a kid is intimidated by him, he can sense it, and he will not go near the kid unless they gradually come over to him or they want him by him. But if you don't mess with him, if you don't like him or anything, I can promise you he will not be one of those dogs come to you and lick you and all that. He will not.
He knows. Sit
by himself.
He knows, man.
Until you're ready to come.
Emails.
This email says it's from Mama Cass. Keep that in mind. Consider the source, dear James. The clones are simply reaccommodating your show. We hope you understand. Signed, United. P.S., a $50 gift card for your troubles. At SCRAW28, United Airlines, you know why I keep a private jet.
You know I
signed
keep a
Floyd
jet.
In Las Vegas. Floyd could at least handle himself. So without going too much in depth into this, you know what happened. There was a United Airlines flight, and they had to get some of their crew on that flight. And by the way, I don't know what the hell was going on in Louisville. It must have been pretty important. Hope that was worth it. And the weirdest thing about this is I once had an incredibly bad experience, not nearly as bad as this poor doctor who got beaten down and dragged off the airplane. But I also once had a really bad experience with United Airlines in Kentucky. So I'm not sure what's going on there, what that's about. But like one of our worst air days or one of our worst days of travel ever was on United Airlines in Kentucky. Now, I'm not one of those guys who rushes to the phone when I have a bad travel day. I actually hate that. Like, hey, I wish this guy next to me would stop passing gas on the airplane. Maybe you tell him that instead of thumbing that out in a tweet. I just don't do that. But now that this is out there and it's that airline and that part of the world, I had a really bad experience with United Airlines in Kentucky. So whatever it was that they had to get their crew to in Louisville must have been really important. Hope that was worth it. Important enough to drag a guy off the plane, bleeding profusely from his mouth, and then caught on videotape. All the more unbelievable when everybody's got a camera in their pocket. Everybody's walking around with a camera now. So how does something like that happen? And one of those people has video of this guy saying, just kill me. Just kill me. Like, it was that bad. Just kill me. So, and part of their, quote, apology, part of their apology was we were just looking to, quote, reaccommodate the gentleman. He didn't want to get off the plane, and they said repeatedly, we need X number of you to get off this plane. We have crew that has to be in Louisville. We need you to get off the plane. So pretty much everybody stands their ground. They don't want to get off the plane. So they just arbitrarily decide who is getting taken off the plane. And when they said they weren't going, or when this guy said he was not going, they removed him from the plane. And the apology included United Airlines saying, "We just chose to reaccommodate this gentleman." Does this sound like he was being, quote, reaccommodated?
Come on.
Right, so you've got other passengers. That one woman's beside herself. No. And one guy's saying, come on. That is their definition of a reaccommodation. What, like we're going to reaccommodate your face? That's what they should have wrote.
Oh my God.
I don't know. Maybe United Airlines actually was being tactical. Maybe this was a strategy. Maybe they did it on purpose. Maybe they want that video out there because from now on, when they have to bump somebody, people will sprint to volunteer because they don't want to get their faces reaccommodated. You know how it is sometimes when you're waiting for an airline or you're waiting for a plane and they overbook. I love that whole notion of overbooking. How about you just don't sell what you don't have? But they overbook and then they start the bidding at a couple $100. We're offering $200. No takers. $250. Like an auctioneer. $250. $300. $350. $400. And then a couple people walk up. And not after seeing that videotape. Maybe they did it on purpose. Maybe it's we're offering $1 in credit and a bag of peanuts. Either that or we will be forced to reaccommodate four of you. I'll take it. We saw what you did to that poor doctor with glasses. We'll take it. Give us our buck and our peanuts. Just do not reaccommodate my face, please. I mean, honestly, there's a lot of jacked up things in the world. I can't believe that happened. I literally cannot get my arms around that. I cannot believe that happened, which is why I'm actually going to allow this on this show. I cannot believe that could happen. Why does the crew get priority over paying customers? How about they just don't get to go? How about they wait for the next flight? And then to not get what they wanted and to physically drag a guy bleeding from the mouth profusely who's saying, just kill me. Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking there might be some litigation there. It is on video because everybody's got a camera in their pocket. How did that happen? This tweet says, "Hey, Rome. Apparently, at United is the airline version of Odor. You have an issue? Go straight to the hands."
Set by Diekman in the pitch and smoke. It's a ground ball left side. Beltre picks to his left, throws to second for one. Rudy to first, and Batista goes after him. And Rudy pushes Batista, and they're in a fight at second base. Rudy threw a couple of punches at Batista, and the dugouts have emptied. This is a real Donnybrook. This is not just players standing around. There's a big flesh pile out in short right field. Hard to see what's going on in there.
That was a real Donnybrook. That was not just players standing around. If Rugi is involved, there's going to be a Donnybrook. He's going to the hands. But you know that about him. And you know Joey Bats has gotten on the wrong side of a lot of guys too. So that was not a surprise. The second that went down, you knew Rugi was going to the hands. You don't expect personnel, security people, to go to the hands when somebody does not take you up on that offer to trade in your seat for a voucher. I would not expect anybody to go to the hands in that case. And again, how'd they arbitrarily decide this was the guy? All right, really, none of you are going to step forward. We'll make the decision for you. Chris R. Cobos tweets, "Jim, at least we know what Joaquin does for a living now. United Airlines Security at JC in Calgary." He tweets, "Can we reaccommodate Parody Larry anytime he calls in, please?" No, this is my whole point. The solution is not to always go to the hands. People are so angry There's so much rage in the world right now. It's almost always the very last thing you do is go to the hands. Not the first thing. Going to the hands is not supposed to be the first thing you do. It's supposed to be the last thing you do. Especially if a guy is minding his own business, trying to get home because he has patients to see because he is a doctor. That guy's not supposed to get the hands. All right, you happy now? We covered it. We hit it. I said I will allow it. I will not allow it to take over the entire show, but I will allow it. And, of course, every single show has one of these guys. This is not, it's not sent to me specifically. There's no salutation. There's no greeting. This is a one-line email which reads, "That guy had it coming." That's his email. Not, "Hey, Rome." Not, "Hey, Van Smack." Oh, and by the way, when I was at the Texas Motor Speedway, this guy's looking at me and waiting and waiting, and I finally look over at him. He goes, "Matthew! Matthew! Matthew!" I said, "Bro, did you call me Matthew? Matthew, hey man, can I get a pic?" I said, "Dude, you do know I'm not Matthew McConaughey, right?" "You're not? Who are you?" "Jim Rome." "Oh, Rome, can I get a pic?" True story. This guy Matthewed me like 5 times. Anyway, this email is not directed to Matthew. It's not signed by anybody. It's a one-line email with 5 words. "That guy had it coming." Why? Why did that guy have it coming? Why? Because he wouldn't get off the plane? Because they asked him to and he wouldn't? Terry Stotts is my guest. Terry, so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great. How have you been, Jim?
Good, good. Terry, good to visit with you. Thanks for doing it. Got to ask you about last night's game. You were down by 1 with just over 6 seconds left. For those who missed it, Shabazz Napier went around a Myers-Leonard screen. The ball bounces off Leonard's knee. Napier appears to lose it. It bounces around. Noah Vonleh grabbed it, laid it in as the buzzer sounded. I've got to get your thoughts on that, Terry. Pretty much the way you drew that thing up, I would imagine.
Well, one thing that gets lost in it was the fact that San Antonio had the ball and we played good defense and ended up creating a turnover to get the ball back down 1. So I was really pleased with the way the guys created the turnover to begin with. But, you know, it's not the way we drew it up necessarily, but I thought Shabazz Napier made a really heads-up play. The ball did get loose, and he wrapped his hand around one of a San Antonio defender and tapped the ball to Noah for the layup. So it was really obviously it was a little chaotic, but I thought Shabazz really made a heads up play to get the win.
Yeah, it was extremely heady, and you get that win, a key win, and you do so despite playing without Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. So what's it do for the team's confidence and everybody involved that you can beat a team like the Spurs with Napier putting up 32 and Vonleh continuing his growth and his contribution?
Well, I thought it was just a really good environment in the arena. You know, San Antonio played their main guys in the first and third quarter, and then the fourth quarter was, you know, I think Coach Pop emptied his bench. But I was really pleased for guys like Shabazz Napier and Pat Connaughton, Jake Layman got to get out there. Noah Vonleh's been starting, and I think he's really improved over the course of the season. But for those guys, those three guys that really never don't get a chance during the season except for mop-up time at the end, it was good for them. They really competed hard. They defended well, and you know, I don't know if you've been to the Motor Center here, but it's a great environment. The fans really appreciated what they did.
Trail Blazers head coach Terry Stotts joining us. Now, Terry, yesterday morning you talked with Lillard and McCollum both. You convinced them to take the night off. You know both those guys want to go to battle every single night. So can I get a sense, what are those conversations like? I mean, are they open to the idea because they know it's best for the team, or do you really have to convince them that this is something they have to do?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, Damian especially, but CJ as well, are such competitors. Dame wants to get out there every time and play, and he's missed some games this year, so it wasn't a fact that he wanted to play 82 games like he did as a rookie. CJ, I was wondering how he was going to handle it because you know, he's had injuries in his career and he had a chance to play all 82 games this year. And but he knew it was in the best interest of the team and the playoffs. And I think what really made it easy for everyone is the fact that we really turned things around after the All-Star game, after the All-Star break, when everybody had a week off and really kind of regained or revitalized themselves. And we're going to need that going into the playoffs.
Hey, Terry, exactly what was that? I was going to ask you about that anyway, but you went into the month of March with a 24-35 record, and then you go 13-3 in March, which was the best record in the NBA over that stretch. So what changed for the team over the past month? Was it something major or maybe just a number of smaller things that just clicked?
Well, I think it's a combination of a few things. You know, the obvious thing that everyone points to is getting Jusuf Nurkić on the team. That trade really gave us a shot of life, and Jusuf was... It was refreshing for him to come into the situation, and we kind of saw that the team was going to change a little bit. So that was certainly one thing. But I think overall, the Damian, who was Player of the Month in March, just has had a great run since the All-Star break. He's been playing some of the best basketball of his life during that stretch. And everybody else, you know, it's obviously it's a team game, but whether it's Al-Farouq Aminu or Mo Harkless or Alan Crabb or C.J. McCollum, it just seems like everybody kind of lifted their game up after the All-Star break. And I don't know if it's subconsciously, we knew that at the All-Star break we had a very tough March, and if we could get to the last 12 games where we had 10 out of 12 at home, we knew we had a chance for the playoffs. And the guys really, they buckled down. We had some really some signature wins. Beat Oklahoma City a couple times, and the road trip where we won 4 out of 5 on the road, that was, we just had some games that just kind of built the momentum for us.
Terry, one last thought, actually. You clinched a playoff spot over the weekend. That makes the fourth straight season that this team's been in the postseason. I know you're not done. I know you're looking to do more than just show up in the postseason. But when you consider what this season's been like, the things that we talked about, how proud are you of the fact that you are headed back to the playoffs?
You know, I'm really proud. This is probably as much of a roller coaster season as I've been involved with. And, you know, I've been in the league for a long time. We've had so many close, disappointing losses. Obviously, the expectations were higher at the beginning of the season. I'm not sure that we handled that as well as we could have. Being 11 games under and showing the resolve to come back and fight for a playoff spot, I think speaks a lot to the character of the players. And it is very rewarding to see where we were last year. It's similar to last year, except last year we didn't have the expectations. This year we were able to fight through some injuries, which we didn't have last year, and kind of get a grip on who we were and made a great push. So, you know, every season, all 4 times that we've made the playoffs here, the season has been rewarding, but this was a little different.
A Sports Emmy Award winner, Pierre Maguire, is my guest. Pierre, it's great to have you back. How are you, Pierre?
Fantastic, Jim. Really nice to visit with you again.
You too, Pierre. You finished up another regular season. The Stanley Cup playoffs are now getting underway. How excited are you to get to this time of the year?
Jacked up. I think the biggest thing in the storylines going into the Stanley Cup playoffs, Jim, all around the league, whether it's Chris Kreider of the New York Rangers in his collision from 3 years ago against Carey Price and the Montreal Canadiens, that'll be on the forefront of that series. The matchup of Columbus and Pittsburgh and Brandon Dubinsky against Sidney Crosby, Nashville Predators with their amazing fan base against the amazing fans and the professional winning team of the Chicago Blackhawks. Jim, I can go down the line. Every single series has amazing storylines that are really going to help create a buzz around all these first-round series.
You're firing me up. Pierre Maguire joining us. And on top of that, Pierre, all these great, great matchups across the board. If you were to take off your analyst hat for just one moment and you look at the sport purely as a fan, how excited are you to see young stars like Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews making their first trip to the playoffs?
Fantastically excited. And I think the biggest thing, Jim, about our sport is ever since 2003, and that was the best draft in NHL history, a lot of those 2003 players that were drafted, they're starting to get a little older, and they were fantastic players, and most of them still are. But you see what's come into the league since then, and continuing with Ovechkin and Crosby and Sagan and Stamkos and Tavares and now you've got McDavid and you know, Eichel in Buffalo, who's not in the playoffs, is going to be a superstar in the league. It is fantastic. Auston Matthews is just a phenom, and I know he plays north of the border like Connor McDavid, but people in Arizona, especially the grassroots hockey people, Jim, they should be so proud, not just of the way the kid plays, the way he carries himself, Jim. It's phenomenal. What a true professional. To put it into a football legacy type thing, he reminds me so much of a John Elway. He reminds me so much of a winning quarterback, a Joe Montana, a guy that's got amazing athleticism, but composure and ability to relate to the media beyond belief.
I think that's a great analogy. Pierre McGuire joining us. I mean, thanks to him, Toronto is making their first trip to the postseason since 2013. So what do you make of the job that Mike Babcock has done with this young team?
He's done a phenomenal job. Listen, I'm not even going to try to pretend with it, Jim. There are holes on that team, especially on defense. And their question marks with their goaltender, Freddie Anderson, who has really never proven he can win in the playoffs. That being said, I think Toronto's probably a year or two ahead of schedule. Mike has done just a surreal job with that group. They're competitive every night. They're arguably one of the most enjoyable teams to watch on television, and clearly live and in color at the Air Canada Center in Toronto. So I think Mike's done a phenomenal job, Jim. I really do.
Well, Pierre, of course, their reward is getting a first-round meeting with Washington. The Capitals have won the President's Trophy for the second straight year or so. It's not like we haven't had this conversation, but is Washington the Stanley Cup favorite in your mind, Pierre, or do you need to see it first to believe it?
To say they're the favorite might be a reach. To say that they could represent the Eastern Conference would not be a reach. I'm still not sold that Chicago is going to get knocked off in the West. I think Chicago, they're just such a professional group of winners. But we'll get to them later. The Washington Capitals have blown me away. The leadership of Alexander Ovechkin, their depth down the middle with Nick Backstrom, with Evgeny Kuznetsov, with Lars Eller, who came over from Montreal, and Jay Beagle. They have the best fourth line in the National Hockey League. And, Jim, if you're going to win playoff series, you got to have depth. Jay Beagle at center, Tommy Wilson on the right side, and Daniel Winnick on the left side. Just a phenomenal array of tenacity and pugnacious play. Jim, Washington is for real, and their acquisition of Kevin Shattenkirk at the trade deadline from St. Louis, where they didn't even give up a roster player, phenomenal. Really phenomenal.
All right, so, Piero, in your mind, why has it not happened for them? I mean, is it a matter of talent? Is it psychological? Is it just bad luck? What has happened to them in recent years in the postseason?
Pittsburgh Penguins have happened to them. Pittsburgh's just been such a darn good organization for so long, and Pittsburgh's always found a way. Even going back to when I coached in Pittsburgh, we knocked Washington out of the playoffs twice, once in the first round, once in the second round, and you know, one time they had a 3-1 lead on us. So I think Pittsburgh's really played a role in that. It's a terribly nasty rivalry, and for whatever reason, Washington hasn't been able to get over the hump. They haven't had a lot of overall depth like they have right now. And I think, quite frankly, there's been some selfish behavior from some of their better players, but I don't see that anymore, Jim. I really don't. I see Alexander Ovechkin as becoming an amazing teammate and a phenomenally good teammate in terms of moving the puck, shorter shifts, not complaining about things. I think there's been a lot of revamping there that's really been positive for the Capitals.
Pierre McGuire, NBC hockey analyst, joining us. He was also a scout and assistant coach for the Penguins when they went back-to-back. Pierre, you mentioned the Penguins. You know them as well as anybody. The defending champs. Are folks sleeping on them right now?
Yes. Mike Sullivan maybe has coached better this year than he did last year, and that's because of, at different times of the season, Jim, as many as 9 regular players have been out of the lineup for the Penguins. So what's happened is their scouting staff has proven that they're really good because they've had a lot of guys that either have been free agents, like Connor Sheary coming out of University of Massachusetts at Amherst, come in and play fantastically well, or a player like Brian Rust, who came in as a mid-round pick out of Notre Dame, or you can even look at anybody on their defense. I mean, it's just unbelievable to have to overcome the loss of Christopher Letang, Trevor Daley, and Olli Maatta, and see what they've plugged in on the back end and been able to hold it together. I think that speaks volumes to their management team and to their scouting staff. Pittsburgh is not getting enough acclaim right now. They are a very, very dangerous team.
Pierre, I got to ask you about this series, too, before you go. You mentioned there were so many great matchups. I had Eric Bieksa on the show last week, and it was the morning after they beat Calgary in that game where Cam Fowler went off with a sprained knee.
Right.
The Ducks clearly did not care for the hit that injured Fowler. There is no love lost between these two teams. How do you see that series playing out?
Nasty, as nasty as any series in the first round. And the biggest reason is what you just alluded to, Jim. You're absolutely right. plus knowing the parties involved. Bob Murray, the general manager in Anaheim, is as tough a competitor as there is, and that usually translates down to the players that play for him. And Brian Burke, the president of the Calgary Flames, used to be the general manager in Anaheim, and he and Bobby worked together. You know there's going to be some very intense competition in the managerial suites on both teams, so that usually flows down to the ice. The biggest thing that can happen in this series is the matchup thing, and for Anaheim, it's Ryan Kessler and Andrew Cogliano, who are really great guys away from the ice, but nasty pieces of business on the ice, Jim, going against Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau. If they turn this into a street fight, talking about Anaheim against Calgary, Calgary's going to have a tough time just because their better players are not overly large people.
I love it. I love that matchup. Pierre, let me keep it here in SoCal before you go. The LA Kings fired GM Dean Lombardi, head coach Daryl Sutter. They promote Luke Robitaille and Rob Blake. What was your reaction when you saw that, and what do you think about those moves?
I was not surprised. Los Angeles, to their credit, especially under Dean and under Daryl, they did everything they could to win the Cup, and they won it twice. But what they did is they basically sold their future to do it. They gave up too many draft picks over the last 4 years. They've only had one first-round pick, Adrian Kempe, who's a good player, but again, that's not enough. You're not going to be able to replenish your system quick enough. I like Luke very much. I've known him a long time. I like Robbie Blake tremendously. I have so much respect for Robbie as a former player and also obviously as a management person. I'm excited for those two guys to get their career started. I feel terrible for Dean. I feel terrible for Daryl. Daryl and I coached against each other in the 92 Stanley Cup final as assistants. That's a long time ago, Jim. But I think the biggest thing I can say is I think Los Angeles wants to go in a different direction now in terms of less brawn, more speed. And under the previous regime, they went for the brawn and they got the cups, but now they got to transition with the rest of the league.
Pierre McGuire joining us. Pierre, one last thought. It's great to have you back on. What a great job you've done. Detroit missed the playoffs this year. It snapped a 25-year streak. Now that it's over, as you look at that, how impressive was that streak, and where do the Red Wings go from here?
Well, first of all, it was phenomenal. Secondly, it all starts with chain of command. When you think about it, Jim, we just lost Mr. Ilitch, the phenomenal owner there, but the Ilitch family owning it, Jimmy Devolano presiding over it, Kenny Holland managing it, and over the course of time, Scotty Bowman coaching in it, Mike Babcock coaching in it, Jeff Blashill. The president presided, the manager managed, the coaches coached, the scouts scouted, and the owners really owned. They understood the chain of command, and the chain of command was never broken there, and that's why they had that 25-year run. Now it's time to replenish the organization. I think Kenny Holland, their general manager currently, will still have a very aggressive plan going into the summer, and I got to think Detroit will be back sooner rather than later.
Pierre McGuire, a Sports Emmy Award winner. You can also see him, of course, on NBC. It's his time of year. The playoffs getting started. No better way to start it, Pierre, than checking in with you. Thank you very much. Great to have you back. Let's do it again soon.
Anytime, Jim, for you. Thank you so much for having me on. And like I say to you every year, thanks so much for your passion for our sport. It's awesome that you care so much about it. Thank you.
You know, perfect games and no-hitters, they're like the Fight Club of sports. People are so superstitious. They know the first rule. Don't talk about them. Fight Club, no hitters, perfect games, same rule. Don't talk about them. Not to yourself, not to your friends, not online. Well, especially not online. Because the internet is in ink and it's time stamped. So the jinx can always be traced right back to you. As sports fans, we get that. Unfortunately, not all Yankee fans get that. For their home opener yesterday, they had a perfect game working. They could have had a perfect game in their home opener, but somebody had to go and jinx it. No names mentioned, Martha freaking Stewart. Everybody knows you do not talk about a perfect game. Well, everybody except M. Stu, apparently. Look, she knows a lot about a lot of things. She knows more about more things than most people I know. How to season cinnamon rolls with just the right amount of pumpkin spice. How to properly trip petunias to give them the perfect amount of volume. And even which wine pairs best when peeling potatoes for your fall harvest party. Things that none of us would have any idea how to do without her. Oh, and don't forget those DIY cranberry wreaths for the holidays.
Cranberries are usually associated with Thanksgiving. They're a Native American fruit grown in Massachusetts and in Wisconsin and in the Northwest. But they are a beautiful decoration, I have found. And for Christmas this year, I'm making, in honor of the state of Massachusetts, a cranberry wreath. This is what the finished wreath looks like.
Right? Who can do that but her? She's amazing like that. She knows a lot about a lot of things. Unfortunately, no hitters and how to stay out of prison are not on that list. So Michael Pineda is working on his perfecto into the seventh, and she whips out her phone and thumbs out this gem. Quote, "It's the top of the seventh here at Yankee Stadium, and the Yankees are pitching a perfect game versus the Tampa Rays." Timestamped 2:51 EST. 2 minutes later, at 2:53 EST, Evan Longoria doubles to left.
And Pineda deals, swung on and line down the left field line. There is a base hit going to the left field corner. It'll be extra bases. Longoria goes to second with a double. The no-hitter, the perfect game is broken up. And listen to the ovation from Michael Pineda.
Yankees radio. Yeah, they were not applauding Martha, I know that. You're not helping them, Martha. You're hurting them. Now, before we bash her for jinxing a perfect game, know that that's not even her biggest crime. Well, I mean, literally and figuratively, but tweeting about the Yankees is. I mean, Martha, here's the thing. Know your room. Know your place. Stay in your lane. This is why I don't talk politics or religion on the program. I'm not paid to talk either. I'm paid to talk sports. And the occasional airline that screws up when they do. I'm going to stick. Stop doing that, Alvin. Hey, Alvin, you know who's going to catch hell for that? Not you, me.
Dude.
So I'm going to stick with what I know best, and you should do the same, like teaching us how to properly cover the orchids in our garden before the first frost of early spring, or how to make the perfect sausage and pepper ragu over polenta using vegetable broth, or how to properly use burlap to make the most delightful autumn centerpieces, on a budget, no less. I'm pretty sure of the 3.65 million followers that you have, not one hit that follow button for your thoughts on the Yankees. You tell me, do her previous tweets show that she's the go-to source for all things Yankee? It's the start of gardening season. See what we did to our sweet pea seeds to prepare them for planting on today's themarthablog.com. If you want to know the right wine to pour or serve, check out hashtag the Martha Blog. Martha Stewart Wine Company will teach you how. On today's themarthablog.com, photos from this season's great potato harvest at my farm. Take a look. I mean, seriously, those are actual tweets. This was her first tweet in 2 weeks that was not her pimping an appearance or her newest book or themarthablog.com. And it just so happened to be the Yankees. And she jinxed a perfecto. Martha, the Islanders played on Sunday. You don't want to hit that 4-2 win? Martha, Brooke Lopez became the Nets' all-time leading scorer last night. I must have missed your tweets on that. Unless you're planting azaleas along the foul line or making organic mulch from sunflower seed shells and Copenhagen, you got to leave the Yankees alone. What if there is no other perfect game there, and it's all on you? It's all your fault. Stick to what you know. Delicious recipes for granola-infused banana bread with a hickory nutmeg ice topping that's just to die for, because it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Stick to your day job. It's what you know, and it pays extremely well. It's what you know, and it pays extremely well, especially when you act on what you know when you're not supposed to. Thank you very much for listening. You know the drill by now. Subscribe, tell a friend, and trust the podcast. And then check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. We will see you then.